Welcome, everybody, to the Stephen Reardon Show. I am Stephen Reardon. Welcome to episode 3 of my podcast. If this is your very first listen, thanks for being here. If you are a returning listener, then you get it. You get me, this humble arts professional living in St. Petersburg, Florida, the best city in the world. And if you're a returning listener, you also know my show is about discovering and supporting and singing the praises of young artists here in St. Pete. Now, if you know me, or if you've been listening over the past couple months, you know that in addition to my work as an actor, director, producer, blah, 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 I was also a theater educator for a few years at a high school right here in St. Petersburg. It was St. Petersburg Catholic High School, to be precise. And it's not only where I taught, but it's where I matriculated myself. I think that's the word, but I'm a theater kid, so I don't know. Where I fell in love with the arts and where I feel I was introduced to like the magic that is theater, right? When we were creating this podcast, it was really very important to me to not just speak to young artists, but to highlight some of those incredible humans who introduce the arts to kids when they need it most. And I have one of those incredible humans as my guest today. Not only is he an actor, director, published author, and all-around great human, but he was the chairman of the theater department at Pinellas County Center for the Arts for, are you ready for this, 30 years. And he drove over the Howard Franklin Bridge for 30 years to educate the youth of St. Petersburg, Florida. Welcome, my friend Kevin Rankin.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's really, really nice to see you. And we met each other earlier in the year when we did Hamlet at the studio at 620. I'm sure my listeners are tired of hearing me say Hamlet. I've said it every episode so far. But when I say it's an honor to have you here, that's really an understatement.
Thank you.
The first two guests on my show were graduates of PCCA. And I've worked with several graduates and other educators that have spent time there. And everyone agrees you are the guy. I mean, I think it's so special that you have such a reputation of bringing the important quality of the arts to so many people here.
Well, thank you. That's good to hear.
And I think for anyone who will listen, I'm quite the advocate of arts in school. I believe, you know, fully that theater saved my life, that my theater high school director saved my life in his surly, you know, way. And with his guidance and his watchful eye, his care for not only me, but so many of us, you know, he made me who I am today. And he's no longer with us, but anytime I have the privilege of speaking to an educator, you know, who dedicated their life to this work, I have to ask, first question, like, this is so cheesy, but do you know, like, the impact that you've had on your students? Do you feel it? Do they come back and tell you?
Well, oh, do I feel it? I think I would like to think that I know it, if that makes sense. I just don't assume it, of course, you know, but you see, like I just saw one of my students in The Wiz on Broadway earlier this year, and that kind of, and they appear everywhere. Do you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I'll be talking to somebody, and someone will say, "Well, they're doing this and this and this and this." And so, over 30 years, I've taught thousands of children, right? And some of them are doing it; others are leading very fruitful lives elsewhere. So, considering my childhood was not all that comfortable and accepting of the arts, it became a kind of an important thing for me for these children who are, you know, a theater kid is a very special child. And it's, you don't often get the chance to have a place where they are going to feel comfortable not only being themselves, but exploring what their art is. And so I always thought that was a special part about PCCA, is that that's what they got to do. For 4 years, they didn't just do what every other high school student does. You know what I'm saying?
But 100%.
But they got to be in an environment where they were surrounded by something they cared about, and it helped them grow, I would like to think. And most importantly, I think, they were safe. Because I didn't necessarily feel safe in my high school. And so to know that they are safe in that space and are allowed to grow in any way, shape, or form that they grow, I think is the most valuable thing.
I agree. And I couldn't have said it better myself. And I only did it for a few years. I sat in the chair of this man who's literally saved my life on more than one occasion. And I remember thinking to myself what a privilege it was, but what a challenge on a lot of levels, because I didn't go to an arts high school, and I didn't teach in an arts high school. I taught at a Catholic high school.
Yes,
and to what you were saying earlier, I think there is this feeling of safety around the arts for kids who don't feel like they fit in other places. And at a place like PCCA, it is like the biodome sometimes. You walk in there and you can feel that kids feel safe there. You can feel that people are there to learn about themselves and to be vulnerable and all the things that high school kids aren't supposed to ever do, you know? And I, even when I was at my Catholic high school, you know, I had experiences with plenty of high school kids who you could tell needed us more than we needed them.
Oh.
And it really, really was the reason that I wanted to do it. I mean, I wanted to give these students that same feeling of safety that, you know, it just doesn't exist. And in the older I get, the more I see it, you know, in my nieces and nephews. And when I go back to school for whatever reason, they do fundraisers or whatever, I'll go back and the vibe is still the same. Like, I still get the butterfly in my stomach. I'm like, oh boy, I better not say anything wrong or look at anybody weird. But, you know, these art schools are different. They let you do that.
And I think that part of the reason I made that drive for 30 years is I would go and acting and theater was happening all the way down the hall. And then you go here a little bit and someone is painting and creating art. And then there's a dance studio right there. And then you go into another building and you hear people singing. And, you know, it's just in the air and it's everywhere, right? And so if I was going to be a teacher, then I was given a gift of being able to be in that environment for as long as I was. So, yeah, maybe I stayed till 5. I was there from 7 o'clock in the morning, sometimes till 5 or 6 or 9. Or if there was an evening performance, I was there till after that. But I was surrounded by all of that.
Mm.
And how could you not like that?
Mm, yeah, you know? I think it takes a special person for sure. I also wonder, no shade to any, you know, academic English math teacher, but I wonder how many students they get coming back and saying, you know, you changed my life. I hope they, you know, they have that same experience because it really does mean a lot. I mean, even in the few years I taught, I've gotten calls from kids or messages on social media that say, do you have any idea what that program did for me? And I, every time I hear it, it's like, wow. It really does hit you where it's supposed to hit you.
Sure,
you
know? Exactly.
I want to talk a little bit about the shows you got to put on at PCCA. Because I saw a couple of them, the ones that you directed, and just shows that I think I spoke to my very first guest on this podcast, Alana, about. She did Parade in high school.
Yeah.
And then she was nominated for the Jimmy Award for Parade, which is not a show you would see normally in a high school setting.
No,
and I think you guys had such an opportunity to do so many amazing shows. Can you talk about a few of your favorites?
Well, and here's my thinking always, is that I thought, okay, if we're a performing arts high school, then we need to do something that is going to stretch them.
Mm.
You know, and so do I want to do a show where they're playing high school kids? They're already high school kids, but if we get them to play stuff that is beyond what their experience already is, then isn't that what acting and theater and art is about anyway, right? So I directed 40 shows, 40 main stage shows, not talking about one acts or finales that were just variety shows, but I directed 40 main stage shows in the 30 years I was there, and my goal always was to pick difficult material.
Mm.
And if I didn't make it cross the finish line in a way I was proud of, so be it. But the trying was the important part, I thought, right? I would say the most difficult show I did in the 30 years there was, did you know Ralph Nirmala?
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. He was my administrator. He was the one who hired me and was there for 20-some years.
Wow.
And he was retiring, and we wanted to do a finale that would be especially meaningful to him. And it turned out one of his favorite shows was Phantom of the Opera. And I'm talking the Phantom of the Opera musical, right? And it had just come available.
Wow.
Right? So it's like, well, we got to do that. We got to do that. And it's the only show that I can remember where a few days before it opened, I went out to the parking lot and sat in my car and cried because I was convinced that I had made a gross error.
And oh, no.
And that there was nothing that people were going to come and see, and they would be like, oh.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's great. So I thought maybe I finally went too far.
How did it turn out?
Oh, I can't tell you how happy I was. You know, because it was one of those things where, okay, you're sitting there, and I'm not a sitter when my shows are performing anyway.
Same for me.
I have to be able to pace or whatever. And so I was like, okay, whatever happens on that stage tonight is what's going to happen on that stage tonight. And it went great. Now, I will say, there are fire special effects there, and we set off the fire alarm.
Oh, no. During the show?
Yes, during the show. And we had to have a fire marshal, because the guy does fireballs, the Phantom does fireballs at one point. We had to have the crashing chandelier and just all this other stuff. So we set off the fire alarm, and so they turned off the fire alarm in that building, but the smoke went through the ducts and set off the fire alarm in the building next door.
I mean...
So we never didn't, but... That we had an 800-seat theater at PCCA, the auditorium. It was full every night. And they couldn't... It was the most difficult thing I did, but that climb was so worth it because I just was so... And it was such a great way to send Ralph off. Mm. And, you know, asking kids to sing what is essentially opera.
Not essentially. Yeah. Pretty much is opera, yeah.
It is. And so, to me, that was just part of what I always did, is you ask kids to go above and beyond what they thought they were capable of. So
that's the thing. I think, too, arts teachers often will energize a student who, you know, teenagers are hard to be energized, let's be honest, right? Unless they're football players or are really big athletes or really big brains, the majority of high school kids are like, I'm tired, I don't want to do it. And there's this feeling of like lag time with them, it feels like. You know, even in rehearsals, they kind of show up, but they don't really show up. Then, same thing, I go back to my car and be like, how am I going to do this? Is it going to work? And we open in 48 hours. And then the theater gods show up, and the kids show up, and it happens. And, and you're like, wait a minute. We are not only teaching kids about the value of theater, but we're teaching kids about the value of showing up and communication and all the things that a lot of things in school, you don't get taught these life lessons.
And being professional.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. And you're right. And there is something about the dynamic of this thing appearing in front of an audience that all of a sudden... There's like electricity, without being too cliche about it, but something just happens, and it became its own thing. And it was just like, oh my God, I did it. I actually did it. And so then I went up to my car and cried for a different reason.
Your car's seen some tears, Kevin.
It sounds like.
I love that.
Oh, well, plus, I have that all that space to drive back and forth.
All that time, yeah.
How much crying took on that time. Especially in the old days when there was only two lanes on the Howard Franklin Bridge. There were some days when I would just turn off my car and get out and look at the water because it was a parking lot.
That story makes me want to cry.
Once they expanded, it was better.
Not so bad.
Yeah,
exactly. Like I said, I went to Catholic school, and you know our shows that we put up, you know, I think my director, the wonderful Joseph Stosky, was very similar to your thinking, where let's push these kids. We're going to do a show. Let's do it. However, he had to jump through some significant censorship hoops. And I think the biggest one that we did, we did a funny thing happen in the way to the forum at St. Petersburg Catholic High School.
Yes.
And we really were pushing the envelope. But he was big on asking for forgiveness rather than permission. And I think we, same kind of thing. It was a really hard score. Like, how are we going to do this? I played Pseudolus. I was so excited. And I was like, this isn't going to work. And it worked. We had high school courtesans. And it was funny. And people loved it. And I saw your production of Rent at PCCA. That was another show that I thought, I cannot believe this show, this beautiful work of art, is being done in a high school with high school students. What are they going to do? And you guys did an unbelievable job.
Oh, thank you. There was a slightly different version of it. You know, it wasn't the junior version. Could you imagine Rent Junior?
No, I can't. You're a good man, Rent.
I know, exactly. But there is a school version, and the one thing I remember that they took out was, you know, there's kind of an origin thing.
Sure.
Where an angel dies at the end of it.
That's right.
And so they just made that slightly different for it. I don't remember the language being incredibly different, and we got permission after a while to stamp ours as being adult. And so when they came, there it was. It says right there, it's adult. And, and of course, you can't sit through the whole thing and then complain about it afterwards if you were warned ahead of time. It's kind of like you go to a restaurant, you eat a steak, and you're like, I didn't like it. Well, then you shouldn't have eaten it. So that's what we would do sometimes, is if I picked adult material, we just would mark it as adult.
And yeah. I was really blown away. I didn't feel like a high school production. It felt like a very professional production. The students showed up, and I think that's what happens at PCCA, like you said, these places. they show up and they do the work. Mm-hmm. As you continued at PCC, I imagine the environment changed. 30 years is a long time, right? Mm-hmm. And did you see a lot of change in policy or parental participation and overbearing students or parents along the way? Like, how did you see the environment shift a little bit?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I don't know that the students changed all that much, because I think what I always got were people who were a little bit not fitting in.
Sure.
And here they did. I don't think that ever changed.
Sure.
I think there was an element of political correctness that started to sneak in. And what can you do about that? You know, for instance, I directed, when Hamilton opened on Broadway, people were like, oh, yeah, we have to do that. I said, when do you think that's ever going to be available? But I said, but we could do his first show in the Heights. And, of course, people associate that with a large Latino population. Sure. Because of where it takes place. And we didn't have a large Latino population in the high school. And people suggested to me that I ask people to darken their skin for the show, which I never did. And that area that they're talking about, all types of people lived there. So you could see that starting to come in a little bit, that people were worried about political correctness. And there were, for instance, the first year I was there, I didn't direct it, but there was a production of The Wiz. I would not direct The Wiz now unless I had exactly the right people for it. And I think we have to think about that more. And so,
I think that's valid. You don't want to see Dreamgirls
any other
way but the way Dreamgirls is supposed to be, supposed to be produced.
Yeah.
Now that you're retired, you've not really slowed down. We're kind of all over the place. You know, like I said earlier, we met working at the studio at 620 together. Kevin did an amazingly ghoulish portrayal of the King of Denmark, which was really a beautiful portrayal. We had some fun with the language backstage, which was really fun. We did a little Elaine Stritch plays the ghost of Ghost of Hamlet, which was pretty great. But you're back at the studio soon. Like, tell me what you're doing at the studio next.
I am. Well, and here's the thing. After a slightly dry spell, I all of a sudden became very theatrically active this year. The stuff all kind of came to me. I was asked to do Hamlet. I was asked to do Love Letters in Tarpon Springs. Why can't I do something right next to my house? And then I was asked to direct Annie and Carolwood, which wasn't too bad. So then I was like, God, I keep leaving my husband home all this time. And I feel bad about it. And he wasn't complaining, but I was like, maybe next we could do something that we could do together.
And he's an actor as well?
He is.
Oh, that's great.
He is. I asked Erica, since she was taking over the reins, here's the space that is available to do stuff. And I said, could we do something to... And she said, because the answer is always yeah.
That's
yes.
Right.
Bob Devon Jones started that. Erica is still carrying that through. And we decided to do Sunshine Boys, which is a Neil Simon comedy from the 70s about two old vaudevillians who can't stand each other. Not that that's any indication of our relationship.
It's not art imitating life at all.
Of 42 years. No. Yesterday was our anniversary.
Oh, happy anniversary. 42 years is no joke.
I know. Lordy, girl.
You're big on like streaks, Kevin.
I try so hard. And they're brought back together again. They can't stand each other, and they have to come together long enough to perform this thing. And so part of the benefit of that is we can rehearse at home.
For sure.
Yeah. Since we're playing the two major characters, we are running lines every day. Walking the dog, we run lines. It's just so that's good. And we're having, so we're doing that. And that opens Halloween, which it's not a Halloween show, but so we're doing that October 31st through November 3rd.
Oh, that's great. And you can buy tickets at the studio's website?
Eventually. I don't think it's up yet, but okay. I just sent her pictures of us, and I think it's going to be up soon.
Love it.
Please buy tickets.
I'll be there.
Please sell out the studio.
I'll be there for sure. Yeah. And when you're not on stage and when you're not changing kids' lives, you are writing books. Literally, Kevin, you are busier now than I've ever been in my life, and I have two jobs in this job. Okay, so I want to talk about what an accomplished author you are. In a recent edition of Who's Who of Emerging Writers, you and your work is featured on that list. You're an American author of literary, fantasy, and LGBTQ fiction. Your debut novel, Welcome to the Day, was a finalist for 5 Independent Book Awards and can be found in print, on Amazon, on Kindle. All right, tell me a little bit about the premise for Welcome to the Day.
Welcome to the Day was actually, I was in a production of The Shadow Box. Do you know that show?
Oh, I love that. I love that play.
Me too. And I was in a production of it, and I was playing one of the characters who was dying, and the failed author. And there were periods of time where they would switch back and forth between the different people, and they'd bring the lights down the other person, but they'd stay on stage. And I started writing.
Mm.
And I wrote the first page of Welcome to the Day on stage.
Oh, that's so cool.
And then fast forward several years later, I needed to get recertified to teach, and I thought, I'm going to take a creative writing class. And I did, and I was like, oh my God, I forgot how much I love this.
Mm.
And so I decided to go to graduate school because... graduate school is going to make you finish that book. It's going to be your graduate thesis. It's good. So I went to UT for graduate school and graduated with my master's degree right after my 60th birthday.
Oh, wow.
And that was my graduate thesis. And the thought that I had in my head is based on the Odyssey a little bit, and that after the war, he spent all these years getting back to his family. And I think that we will do whatever it takes to get back to whatever home means to us. And so it's the story about this aging man at the end of his life who is just riddled with regret and one day has the chance to get back to home, whatever home means.
Wow.
And so it takes place over the course of one day. And that's what he does. And also, I visit the Seven Ages of Man from Shakespeare a little bit because on his journeys, it's like he relives the past and part of what he regrets and realizes he has a chance for redemption.
Oh, that sounds so great. I'm playing Peter Demenz in an original play at American Stage called Weird in St. Pete, and it's this really cool interactive show where you go to different rooms and there's a different story. And so it's a monologue play. My monologue, Peter's monologue, is really about what home is.
Oh.
What he was, obviously, he was born in Russia and is the father of St. Petersburg, in quotes, right? But his whole story is about how he ended up in the United States and how he had to find home and who was home, what was home, and so that resonated with me. It's very exciting. I'm excited to read it.
And the picture on the front of the book is my father.
You told me that when we were in rehearsals, and I love that idea.
Yes.
That's not you, though.
No, that's not me. That's my older brother, my older sister. If you read the book, there's a reason why the wife is cut off. But you see that chubby little arm right there?
Yes, that's
me.
You. The cover is really, really cool.
And my goal, part of my goal was, we don't always have the best relationships with our father, or maybe they're misunderstood, or they're very complicated, right? And so I wanted to get it published and be able to hand him a copy.
Mm.
And on his 90th birthday, I was able to hand him a copy of that.
Oh, wow.
And then 9 months later, he died of COVID.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I got it in his hand so he understood.
That's wonderful.
Before he was gone.
That's wonderful. Book number two is Graphic the Novel, and it is a winner of the BookFest Award in the category of Best Contemporary Fiction. It was published by St. Petersburg Press in 2022, mm-hmm. and it's available in paperback. So you can purchase this as well and read it. Really quickly, what's the premise of Graphic the Novel?
Graphic was kind of my angry COVID book.
And we all need an angry COVID book, I think.
I think so. And then once it has to do also again with grief and the fact that what happens to us if we're suddenly given a gift and it's like more than we know what to do with, and what do we do with it? And so in a rash moment, this man does something that gives him this amazing, almost like superhuman gift.
Mm.
And then what does he do with it? And then he finds out all kinds of things about what are happening, and then there's things going on. And one of the things I liked doing in the book was I would insinuate stuff without actually coming right out and telling you. There's reference to the crucifixion, but I never come out and say it's the crucifixion. There are these other beings out there. Are they vampires? I never say they are, but so I wanted to play with that notion of letting the audience do some of the figuring out of what's going on themselves.
Oh, I love that.
And I wanted to write like it was a graphic novel, but if I'd waited to have someone illustrate the whole thing, it would have taken me at least another year.
Sure.
So it's called Graphic the Novel because it's a graphic novel, but without all the pictures.
Without the graphics.
And yes, exactly. Except you see the cover.
Yeah, the cover's very graphic, I will say.
Makes it look like it's a graphic novel.
I love it. And if you're interested in learning about how Kevin writes and his ability to weave a story, which he's already been doing this whole afternoon for us, you can go to University of Tampa. He's an adjunct professor in screenwriting at the University of Tampa. Mm-hmm. Did I get that right?
Yep.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Again, what you do and how you touch so many people, I think, in a way that's so important when it comes to learning about how you become your best artist. I think, to me as a human and as an I identify as an artist in a lot of levels, the people that taught me how to hone the skill, how to create something out of this wild thing in my brain, they've made such an impact on my life. And I think that's what you were saying earlier about not everyone who went to PCCA kept acting, but what they did was they took the things that they learned there and they became their version, their best version, hopefully, of what their artist is.
And I would like to think that they realized that no matter who you are, you have something to contribute.
Mm.
And that whatever that is to contribute has value and has worth, and that you need to keep contributing if you can.
I love that.
When you can.
I love that, and I agree. Finally, Kevin, I like to ask all my guests what the arts mean to them in a few words or less. And I saw this meme on social that really got me, and it has all these different things. I won't rattle them all off, but it's like not only the art, but like respecting others, starting a dialogue, finding your voice, making connections, self-evaluation, observing. It just, I love that it reminds people that it's not just about getting on stage and faking things. It's about creating this different world for a little while for people that are need to get away. Like, what do the arts mean to you?
I think it is always meant, especially growing up as a little gay kid in a farming community, very small town, this other stuff, I felt seen.
Mm.
And I realized that I was where I was supposed to be when I was in an artistic environment creating art. So then as a result, I think I felt safe there too. And I found the place where I was supposed to be and where I was being seen and where I was safe. This was supposed to be me.
So. I couldn't agree more, and I really feel the same way. It's true. When you grow up, you know, and I was in a very Catholic family my whole life, very conservative Catholic family. Same thing, though. You grow up as a young gay kid, and you're like, how do I show up? What version of me needs to show up to stay safe?
Yeah.
And then you walk into a theater room, and you're like, oh, wait, just myself. Just who I am is enough.
Yeah.
And it really does, it changes so many lives. So thank you, Mr. Rankin, from the bottom of my heart, for the thousands of students who I'm sure still think of you as a true inspiration. Thank you for caring about the work so much.
Oh.
I think we both agree that it does change lives.
Yeah. It absolutely does, yes.
So don't forget to see the Sunshine Boys, the studio at 620, October 31st, November 1st, and November 2nd, 7:30, and November 3rd at 3 o'clock. Tickets will be on sale soon, so you can check out the tickets at studio at 620. Thank you for joining us on the Stephen Reardon Show.
You're very welcome.
If you or someone you know would be a good guest for the show, email me, please, at stephenriordanshow@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. Until next time, be kind, be curious, keep creating.